I was hoping to make clues jump. Ow, jam! Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another fun-filled episode of Monday Night Magic here on twitch.tv/themanapool. I'm Chewy.
Hey, Chewy.
You can tell. It says right there. You see where it says it Devils? Right below that, it says Chewy. I'm the Devil's Chewy.
What does it say under me? Okay.
And over there, or over there, is Clues.
It appears to say Clues down here.
It does, yeah. It's crazy like
That's the way you spell Clues.
So,
well, okay, that's the way I spell Clues, since I am he.
Yeah.
He is I. I am they. Damn it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Clues. Hey, Chewy,
I see
how
lots
you doing?
Of people that know how to spell your name when they just say Clues, put a Y in there, and I'm like, no, that's Cluse. Like,
yeah, I also see people who know me in my professional life who also know me as Clues, because most people do, who will... Oh, by the way, it looks like some bits got thrown there.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to wait for you to finish your sentence.
Oh, sorry. I was startled by the bits. Startled by the bits. That's a pretty good bit, being startled by the bits. But I see people in my professional life who will spell my actual name, which is Lac Luzé, without the Y, because they're used to seeing Clues with the Y, but you don't actually need the Y when you're just saying Clues. You do need it when you're saying Lac Luzé. But you also need an accent on the E, which doesn't get in most computer fonts, and that's probably way too much. Let's talk about magic, shall we?
Or, if you're a School of Movies podcast, he's Aaron Lac Luzé.
Depends on the week. It actually, I'm not sure he's ever done it the same way twice.
I've been listening to lots of episodes back to back here lately, and most of the time you're Aaron Lac Luzé, which is close.
It is. It's dangerously, it's asymptotically approaching my name.
But yes, thank you, Pinball Witch, for the bits to see if you could get an early what was that. Actually, I was paying attention, so no, you didn't.
Okay, Pinball Witch, I don't know about that. That thing you wrote there, because I don't know who that first person is. The Clues tones, they sound awesome, but I don't know who that first person is. This Aaron, I don't know who that is.
Yeah, Aaron. He works for Wizards.
He done messed up.
Aaron Forsythi. That's how you say his name. Anyway, so, yes, hello, this is Monday Night Magic, number 647.
That's right.
Clues is in a good mood, so we're going to be horribly off track this entire episode.
Yeah. Do you remember, for the past several weeks, I have reported to the show, like, completely exhausted because I couldn't sleep the night before because of, like, horrible anxiety, and I just couldn't fall asleep. It was, like, terrible insomnia. That did not happen this week. I mean, don't get me wrong. I didn't get enough sleep, but when I went to bed, I just fell asleep basically immediately and slept straight through till my alarm.
Yeah, this time you didn't get enough sleep because PAX, not because...
Yes, that's true. And, horrible, you know, reasons. In a way... kind of sad about that because I really, really enjoy PAX. Oops. And so I'm sad to be back from that. But there'll be some PAX stories later on. I will try to work them organically into the show so that I can derail us as many times as possible. Let's talk some news.
All right. So, hey, PAX East was this weekend.
Hey, it was. It was out in Boston.
Where?
Not Austin. Boston with a B. Boston.
Oh, you mean Baston.
Baston. That's right.
It was in Baston.
Baston. I heard some amazing Baston accents this weekend.
I should hope so. Because you were sort of at ground zero for those.
In Baston. But sometimes you're out there and you don't hear a ton of them. But sometimes you do. And this time I heard a ton of them.
Nice.
Also, Cranberries, fingers crossed. Yeah, no PAX plague, we hope. Usually there's about a two-day lag on that. So I'll let you know. Ask me again on Twitter, say Wednesday.
Yeah, that stuff's got to incubate.
It does, so that we can spread it far, far and wide. But mostly, I try my best not to touch anything or anyone if I can help it while I'm there.
Yeah,
I consider just wearing gloves.
The important thing that happened was not that Clues was at PAX, although that's awesome.
It was awesome.
The important thing that happened was that at PAX East... I burped. Let's try this again. At PAX East... Magic... had hit its very first esports tournament.
Yes, and I think it is fair to say that this was the very first real true esports tournament. I mean, yeah, we've had streaming video coverage of Magic events before. We've had streamers who did stuff, you know, with MTGO streaming. All that kind of stuff has happened before. But this is the first time that there was a true concerted effort from all parties to make it into the grand spectacle that one might assume when they hear the word esports. So I would like to set the stage on the ground, like what it looked like from my point of view. And then I'm going to kick it over to Chewy to get his impressions. And then I think we're going to talk about the actual results and what went on.
Okay, well, before we do that,
yeah,
we should talk about what the hell we're talking about. The Mythic Invitational, as we've been talking about for the last few weeks, happened at PAX East. It featured 64 players, the MPL members, most of them, the top eight from the Magic Arena ranked ladder in February, and various other streamers and influencers and content creators and whoever, whatever.
Assorted big name players. And the rest.
Yes.
For those of you who watched the first season of Gilligan's Island and the rest.
Yeah, they will be known as the invitees because they were all just invited.
Right.
And this, like I said, is the first esports tournament for Magic because it was all played on Magic Arena. It was a $1 million tournament, the biggest Magic event has ever seen as far as prize payout. First place got $250,000. Buh.
Yeah, that is not a small number.
It is not. So, yeah, that's what it was. And it was very much spectacle. But for that, we will go to clues.
All right. So, PAX East runs 4 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The tournament, the Invitational, started on Thursday, but I was not able to be there on Thursday at all because pseudo-real job over here, so I couldn't just duck out until Thursday night. Thursday night, flew out, so Friday morning was my first introduction to what was going on at the show. Originally, I didn't really know exactly how this was going to be set up because, of course, you know, these are you know, two players who are at separate computers fighting against each other. They had done matches in arenas before at other PAXes, and the way they had been done is the players were like on stage wearing like headsets that would, you know, pipe in noise so they couldn't hear what was going on outside, so that they could have commentators actually live commentating the match. So I figured it would be something like that, but I didn't know if they would be in a specific place. WotC actually had like, I don't know, like a 40-foot by 40-foot space on the show floor. It was a big space on the show floor, like one of the really big ones.
It was.
And it was built up kind of arena like. And so the thing you saw on the stream was the stage portion. There was a small area for seating. It was maybe two or three rows of chairs. I would say you probably had room for maybe 20 people to actually sit on the set and watch what was going on. Then you had other corners of the booth that were for like interviews and where the commentators were. But then they had like giant screens up above so that you could watch it if you were walking by. Now, the problem with that is you're on a show floor. And so just standing in the aisle and watching it is kind of frowned upon because you hold up traffic. But they at least put it in an area where there were fairly large aisles. So you could just stop by and watch it for a few minutes and then move on because, you know, there's lots of stuff to do at PAX. But it was definitely going on. And it was definitely loud, and there were definitely pyrotechnics, which was pretty darned awesome. The setup from the ground looked really, really nice. It looked very slick. It looked like they really planned out exactly how it was going to flow. I liked that a lot. There were a couple of times that they did like a panel, more on the panel later, and they did like the finals when they were streaming it, where they took over another portion of the show floor, which was another giant booth like way the heck over there on the other part of it, over there on the show floor, that had a bunch more seating and a stage and a bunch of big screens. And they like streamed and commentated, you know, the finals from there. That area was, confusingly enough, that area was called the PAX Arena, not to be confused with Magic Arena at PAX, which was back over at that booth that I just described, the first booth that I described with all the pyrotechnics. So they would occasionally have Magic Arena in the PAX Arena, but only certain times of the weekend, if that makes sense. So since I was at the show, I actually didn't get to watch most of it. And this is kind of a weird parallel to when I was doing so much judging, that I was often at an event but had no idea what went on in like the top tables. Cause you know, I was back in either the back tables or I was on side events or I was, you know, wherever it was. So I would come back from an event and I would have to ask these jokers, including Squee, who is not with us this weekend, cause he's off in Japan. Way to go, Squee. Hope you're having fun. But I would have to come back from the weekend and go, hey, what actually happened with the top tables? Cause I actually have no idea who won this tournament, even though I was there. So it was kind of weird from my standpoint. It was kind of very vaguely reminiscent of that. But Chewy, if I'm not mistaken, you watched a great deal of this streaming coverage over the weekend.
Damn near.
Most of the feedback I saw on Twitter was that it was overwhelmingly really good and really enjoyable to watch. What were your impressions?
So on the first 2 days during the group stages, because they had the 64 players broken down into 16 player groups. And each, the first 2 days they did two groups each. I missed, I think, the first round or two each day because I woke up late. And then I came in here and turned it on and started watching and just never stopped both days. For the last 2 days, I actually woke up early to be sure to get in here when it went live to watch the whole thing. And it was impressive. All of the on-camera staff was amazing. We had Day 9 as the stage host, who was the one out there introducing people with pyrotechnics and whatnot. Day 9 didn't have pyrotechnics. Do not give Day 9 pyrotechnics. Kibler was an analyst. That's Brian Kibler. You know him. They had two commentary teams of Paul Cheon and Alias V, who has an amazing announcer voice. And then the other team was Marshall Sutcliffe and David Williams, who were cute as always, I guess. And then they had Becca Scott as the person asking all of, she was BDM. She was asking all the questions after each round. And they were all really good at it. There were a few, especially on the first day, there were a few like technical miscues when the commentator said, all right, let's take it to Day 9 to introduce the next round. And it cut to the shot of where Day 9 would be standing. And it held there. And it held there. And then it cut to an overhead shot. And then it went to a commercial. And I was hosting the Twitch chat the whole time, and I think Pinball Witch was the only person in there with me. And I was like, Code 9! Code 9! Day 9 has gone missing! Someone chased down Sean! But apparently before I woke up on the first day, the background noise from all of the surrounding booths was really loud on the stream. But they apparently fixed that by the time I started watching, because I didn't notice it at all. But other than the, like a couple of little goofs like that, which are going to happen in any live event. I've seen similar things happen on like the Overwatch League, which is the most professional esports thing there is. Where the person holding the mic will say, and now we'll go to such and such, talk about whatever. And they'll just stand there looking at the camera because they haven't cut away yet. And usually they'll do something like, and make a face, and then it'll cut. But so you can't really blame them for those little things, because those happen everywhere because they're doing it live. Anytime you're doing it live, stuff happens.
Stuff happens. That is right.
So, but overall, all of the flubs that I saw were just funny. It wasn't like, oh my God, Wizards. That was later. That was on Sunday, which we were all angry about. But we'll get to that when we get there. But
all right.
But yeah, the game, because it was Magic Arena, the games were all quick. We didn't have to worry about
shuffling. Yeah, I noticed
that.
You know, the games would start up and I'd be like, oh yeah, I guess I'll check and see how that match is doing in a little bit. And then I get distracted by, I don't know, a bit of tinfoil or a booth where someone's shouting or, I don't know, penny arcade pins. I don't know. And then I would look back and it's like, oh, that match was over a long time ago and we're on another match now.
Yeah, yeah. Because it was on Magic Arena, there's no shuffling and it was duo standard, so there's no sideboarding.
Yep.
Your So the duo standard format, each player had two decks made up that were standard legal, best of one, and the deck each player played was assigned randomly for the first game.
In game one, yeah.
For the second game, you played the other one, and then if, for the third game, if necessary, you got to pick which one, so there was your heavy strategy. And that's why we're not going to go into the deck lists, because they were made for this bizarre format.
Yep.
But we will talk about what the overall archetypes were, I'm sure, for some of these players. But
now, if I'm not mistaken, they were allowed to submit the exact same deck list twice if they wanted to.
Yeah, one person did that.
Okay, how'd they do?
Well, it was Cedric Phillips, and he beat LSV, and then he got knocked out. So,
right. My understanding is he didn't just beat LSV, he destroyed LSV.
Most of the games when someone won were destruction. Like,
gotcha.
Because of the nature of the decks involved, if a mono-white deck got a good to amazing opening hand, then it was just... I saw mono-red decks kill people with only three land.
Nice.
Like, yeah. I saw Esper-control decks. Okay, they didn't win quickly, but when they won, it was obvious that they were going to win, because they were like, no, 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 no. Okay, you can't do anything the rest of the game. I got this.
You just sit there quietly.
Exactly. Draw your card and let me do 15 things on my turn. And then you draw your card. So, yeah, lots of the games were just brutal beatings. I saw, I think it was MTG Nerd Girl, just annihilate Autumn Burchette in two games. It was just like, ah! And it was brutal. I was like, oh my god. They've probably got a family. What are you doing? But because it was Arena... Now, longtime listeners will know, I don't watch people play Magic. It bores
me. No, you don't.
I hate
it. Yes, it does.
Occasionally, I will watch like a Pro Tour Top 8. I think I watched the top four of the Mythic Championship. I think. But I just can't. It just bores the piss out of me.
Not to be confused with the Mythic Invitational, because those are two different events.
Correct. Yeah. The Mythic Championship, formerly Pro Tour.
Right. Yes.
But this, I watched all of it, which should tell you something about its watchability. I did get bored a couple of times, but that was just because I had other stuff going on. So I had it open like on my iPad, which is sitting right here, and I was doing stuff on this monitor, but it was still here and still playing at me. I never shut it off or walked away once I turned it on all weekend, not counting when Mike and I went to get lunch waiting for the last couple matches to start. But we got back before, like, turn four, so it was fine. So, yeah, it was impressive. It was well done. Having the face cams on people were an excellent touch, because face cams on like digital card games, they don't matter most of the time, but when they do matter, it's great. Like when Savich was playing his, against, I think it was, Pterodactyls for the win or something like that. I forgot her name. And he almost had it all sewed up. He had like two or three counterspells in hand or something. And she drew and dropped a Carnage Tyrant, and he went and, like, emoted, which we all know from watching Pro Magic players, that's not a thing that happens. Because Pro Magic players are very stoic and very poker face. He was like he did the hands on the head, the mouth in an O, the eyes wide. It was great. He won that game, by the way. But I'm trying to think of what else. The fact that there was no shuffling when game one ended,
mm-hmm.
game two was up and running within like 2 or 3 minutes. Just, it was glorious.
Yeah, I gotta say, I'm an old man. We know that.
I do know that.
In general, my first reaction to change is the knee jerk. This is horrible. Let's not do this.
He's not wrong.
Everything was fine before. Everything was fine. Stop it. Stop changing things.
When I say he's not wrong, I mean that is his first reaction. He's not wrong about it being his first reaction.
You know, I try and fight against that when I can, but just the change of no shuffling. Oh my God, that is. Oh my, the number of times when I was judging and you're waiting. Okay. So here's a scenario. Okay. You're a floor judge at a GP now called whatever they're called.
Still
calling them GPs. You're a floor judge at a GP and you're on the deck check team and somebody's like, okay, here are the tables you need to go deck check. So it's like table 53 and you go to table 53 and you don't want them to know that you're going to take their deck. So you're kind of standing a little ways away and you're talking to another player or to another judge looking all nonchalant and you're looking at table 53 and they're shuffling and they're shuffling and they're shuffling and they're still shuffling. They continue to shuffle. The shuffle is continuing, still shuffling, all the shuffling. Pretty sure those sleeves are just going to wear themselves down while we shuffle, shuffling, shuffling. Now they finally present and you swoop in. Okay, let's just get rid of all the shuffling. I mean, we got rid of deck checks too, because I mean, it's electronic now, so that's totally cool. But still, just getting rid of that shuffling portion of what you needed to do is such a game changer for actually playing this game in a timely fashion. So,
and, like, the physical manipulation of your deck, putting cards on the bottom, or third from the top, or wherever Teferi tucks things, all of that. I don't actually. Teferi shuffles things in, right?
Oh heck, I don't know. Teferi, I thought that he put them like three from the top.
Okay, yeah. I thought you don't have to like and put it. It just happens. You cast Mastermind's Acquisition, and you pick a card, and then you have that card. If you choose to search your deck, you just scroll, click, got it. And you don't have to spend 5 minutes doing this now. It's done. It makes everything so much faster. And from a viewing standpoint, that's amazing. From a commentating standpoint, I'm sure that's amazing because they don't have to fill time. There's no time to fill.
I was going to ask about that because I know, you know, the one thing you don't really want to have on a stream is long stretches of silence. So I know in live Paper Magic matches that they're commentating, they're constantly talking about stuff. And I'm sure after a few hours, it just becomes, we're just going to talk about the same stuff again because it's been a few hours. So we're just going to bring up this thing. Was there much of that or was there constantly so much action going on that they were just constantly talking about
the game. When the games were happening, it was constantly, here's what's happening. They had to repeat what duo standard was like every game or every match,
of course,
in case someone just started watching and didn't know what was going on, obviously. But, what Pinball Witch just said, she said, at one point, I remember the commentators were talking between matches, and normally when you cut back after like 2 minutes, it's still shuffling, but they were on turn three already. And yeah, I found myself doing that a lot. I'm like, okay, game's over.
I can go get a drink.
I can go get a drink, hit the bathroom and come back. And they're on like turn four and I'm going, right. It's just pick your class, pick your deck. Wrong game. Pick your deck and
wrong game.
Choose whether or not to keep and go.
Okay, so I think we've set the stage enough. Let's talk about who actually won the whole shebang and how it went down.
So, the first 2 days, like I said, they took the 16... The 16 people in each group and cut it down to four. So, group A, B, C, D, you got four people from each group. Boom. That was your top 16. That was day two. All of this is double elimination, by the way. So, you had to lose twice, and there were a bazillion matches that didn't happen on screen at all, which I understand why, but it was kind of a bummer that, like, we didn't get to see BDM not once, unless it was real, real early, because he got knocked out, I think, pretty quick. But, so there's all kinds of stuff that we didn't get to see. There's all kinds of people we never saw on camera. Which is gonna happen, but, you know, like, damn. So that was, they got four from each group over the first 2 days. And then the next day is a new bracket, top 16. And that's your new double elimination bracket. You work that top 16 down to four people. That's your top four. The last day was your top four, where all the matches were on camera, I think.
I think they were, yeah.
I'm pretty sure. After watching for 4 days, it's all blended together now. But your top four... Okay, no. After your first 2 days, remember I said you had the MPL members, you had the top eight, and you had all the invited people, right?
Right.
So, clues. If you're going from 64 down to 16, what percentage of the field is moving on?
I'm going to say 4, because I wasn't actually paying attention to the question you asked me. I was reading a thing about the final matches. I'm sorry, what did you say?
So if you're starting with 64 people.
Yes, I got 64,
and
sure.
You're going down to 16.
Yes.
What percentage of the field is actually moving on?
Oh, so that's 25% of the field, because you got half of half.
Thank you, clues.
Okay, you're welcome.
I think it was Frank Karsten, ran the numbers, and roughly 25% of each of those three groups made it today to the top 16.
Huh.
So.
Is that an indication? There's two things that this could be an indication of, right? Indication number one, these were, in fact, people who should have been here.
Yeah.
Or this format is random.
And judging from what I watched, I would say it's more the first one.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Because I saw some aggro decks destroy some control decks, and I saw some control decks destroy some aggro decks, and then you get the aggro mirrors, and you get the control mirrors. The fact that it's random means that everyone has the equal shot based on what they brought and their skill level. And since pretty much everybody there knew what the hell they were doing, so we got it down to 16 players, right? Roughly 25% of each group, right?
Right.
So then we go to the top four.
Yes.
Where we had two MPL members.
Uh-huh.
Of,
So let me just check. That's 50% of the field.
Yes, it's Andrea Mengucci and Piotr Golgowski, I think, were the two.
Yes, they were the MPL members.
The two MPL members. And then you had one invited person, Andre Strosky, who was one of the high-level pros that just missed the cut to be in the MPL, I think.
He is described as challenger and online qualifier.
Right. He was one of the top eight people. Excuse me. Yes, Andre Strosky. But he was also a pro player that just missed the cut to the MPL, I'm pretty sure.
I think you're right, yeah.
So he was one of the top eight. And then the fourth player was Savic, who is a streamer.
Right.
So we had two MPL members and two non-MPL members, one of each from the other groups. So it came down to a 50-50, which is insane. Like, it's crazy.
It is.
Like, now when I say Savic is a streamer, he's been playing Magic since, like, 2000. And he was a Hearthstone streamer. That's where I first heard about him. And then he got bored with Hearthstone, and when Magic Arena came out, he jumped over to that. So I think his life is like Magic Arena and Dota Auto Chess as far as streaming. I'm pretty sure. So,
I'm sorry. What was that thing that you said after that? It was Magic Arena and what now?
Dota. You know?
Yeah,
Dota.
I got that. Yeah, yeah.
Dota Auto Chess. It's a very popular mod for Dota.
Okay. Does it involve cars?
No.
Okay.
Okay. So, yeah, that was your top four. I was on Team Savic the whole way because, one, he's a streamer, and I would love it if a Hearthstone player was able to take the whole thing down, even though he's a Magic player. A lot of people are going to be that, oh, he's a Hearthstone player, because these are the same people that refer to Kibler as a Hearthstone guy. Never mind, he's in the Hall of Fame for Magic, but whatever. And he knocked out such names as Reed Duke. Well, not knocked out, but he defeated such names as Reed Duke,
mm-hmm.
John Rolfe.
Yep.
Gab Nassif.
Oh, yep.
He lost to Siggy the first day. There's at least one more MPL member that he knocked out. That he beat. And he was on this insane tear of just destroying people that should have won based on being in the MPL or being in the Hall of Fame. And Yeah. Sadly, he didn't end up getting there. He ended up third. But still, that's pretty awesome. And it came down to Piotr Glogowski and Andrea Mengucci. And Mengucci took it 2-0 convincingly, not close. Damn.
Yeah.
Damn. I will say the two of the best games that I saw, and Clues, uh-huh. You're not gonna like this, I don't think.
Probably not.
But two of the best games that I saw as far as intensity and strategy were Control Mirrors.
Well, you know, those do have a lot of strategy in them, so I could see it.
Okay, no, I'm sorry. One of them was not a Control Mirror. It was a Control versus Aggro. It was,
Oh, well, that one went the wrong way.
Yeah, the game that kicked Savic out, his final game, it was game three that put him in third place, was this insane chess game from Glogowski, who was playing Burn, and Savic, who was on Esper Control, that it was this cat and mouse, like, next level on the next level on the next level. You could see, and the commentators were doing a wonderful job of spelling out what was going on. And it was really, really fascinating. And another one was a Control Mirror. It was Matt Nass getting out of a Teferi emblem lock. This was on day two, I think. I think it was in the top 60. It might have been in the group stages. I don't remember. But he got himself out of a Teferi emblem lock that... Was that Seth Manfield? I can't remember who beat him. I think it was Seth... Or who he beat. I think it was Seth Manfield. But... His opponent had the Teferi emblem out forever, and he had a Teferi in hand, a Teferi in his library as the only card, and a Teferi on the battlefield. Clues, are you listening to this?
I am.
Okay, good. And like I said, he had this emblem going forever.
Yeah.
But Matt Nass still had a crap load of land because he had so much land out that, you know... There was not much he could do. So he had to tuck his Teferi every turn to not deck himself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Matt Nass found Mastermind's Acquisition, cast it to go to his library, or to go to his sideboard, to get Unmoored Ego. Do you know Unmoored Ego, Clues?
I'm afraid I don't. You're going to have to refresh my memory.
Unmoored Ego says name a card. I think you name a card. You search your opponent's hand, deck, and library for cards of that name.
Hand,
deck, and graveyard, I think.
Uh-huh.
Exile them.
Uh-huh.
And then they draw cards equal to the number you took out of their hand. So he now has zero cards in his library because the last card was a Teferi, and he was forced to draw, and he lost. And
nice.
Matt Nass had this plan for, like, turns and turns and turns. And the commentators didn't even see it until it got there and it happened. And it was just ridiculous. I was sitting here going, what? What? Because they said multiple times, this game's just going through the motions. But there's a lot on the line, so you just don't want to up and concede if you don't have to. And it turns out he won that game.
Nice.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. But yeah, so... But there were games where, like, the Mono White deck got, like, the... Turn three, Venerated Loxodon to get out of range of all the sweepers. And I saw Mono Red drop Experimental Frenzy and go, oh my God. There was so much good Magic being played.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, hey, as much as I'm enjoying the waxing poetic about how awesome it all was, we got a lot to get through here.
We're
40 minutes in.
Yeah, but this is huge. This was a massive turning point for Magic.
Okay, fair. This was kind of important.
Yeah.
Kind of important.
Also, it's a thing because I don't ever watch Magic, so I'm excited when I do. But
yeah, I gotta say, I am somewhat sorry that I didn't get to watch more of it, first of all.
Well, I mean, you were there, so you had other things to do.
Right, but yeah, I was gonna say, even so, I didn't get a chance to, you know, watch it. And secondly, I actually want to play Arena now. That's the kind of the first time I've really felt like I'd really want to try this. So, kudos, Watsy. It worked. I want to play. I want to play your game. Now, could you release it on not Windows? How, oh, you can't. No, won't.
Won't.
Won't. Is what you. Yes, won't. And so I'm going to have to boot into Windows to do that.
So, as you can see here, yeah, Andrea Mengucci won the whole thing. A 2-0. It was just awful. Just bah. With, since I was pulling for Mengucci myself, since Glogowski has this habit of constantly emoting at his opponent, and that makes me angry. So I was pulling against him.
Okay, fair.
As someone who plays, who's been playing Hearthstone for a very long time now, the constant emoting gets you squelched. He did it so much, most of his opponents were auto, were turning on, there's a setting to disable emotes. So much so that when one person, I forget who, wanted to say good game, they had to go into their settings and uncheck that so they could emote. Because of Glogowski. And that just pisses me off and rubs me the wrong way. So the commentators are like, oh, he's a fun guy. No, he sucks. So, the personal opinion. So, yeah. Mengucci got there. Remember last week we said it was powered by Omen? That's huge. Here's your final bracket. Just in case you're interested. And, yeah. It was a hell of a thing. If you haven't watched some of this, you probably should. The spectacle was all there, as you said. The crew, the on camera crew, were just on point the entire weekend, and the couple times they weren't, it was funny. So it was fine. So. What else we got, Clues? Is that good for the Invitational, you think?
I think that's good for the Invitational. Like we said, Dex, it's not actually worth our time to go through them because strange format. They were standard decks. Play some standard Magic.
The vast majority of players, something like 60% of people, I think, brought an Esper Control deck.
Mm-hmm.
And the two most popular other decks were Mono White Aggro and Mono Red Aggro. Piotr Glogowski was the only person to bring Mono Blue Tempo, and he made it to the finals, so, you know, that's a thing.
Mm. It's not something we should reward.
But these are all decks that are tuned for the best of one environment, so, like, copying these decks card for card will not do you any good at FNM.
No.
So, that's why...
But should you find yourself at... the Mythic Invitational at PAX East 2019, some of these might help.
Yeah. And, like, we don't have an easily... Oh, top 16 deck list. Okay, yeah, we do. I just had to click a couple times.
Oh. Wow, where'd you click?
I don't remember now, because I didn't open it in a new tab.
Fair enough. It's all good.
Let's see. Mono Red... Oh, this is MTG Nero. I'm like, green, blue, disruptive aggro. Okay. Matt Nass was Mono Red and Esper Control. Jessica Estefan, I think is how you say her name, was in Team of Reclamation and Naya Angels. Andre Strosky was Mono Red and Esper Control. Selesnya aggro and Mono Red aggro. There you go. That's for you, Clues.
Thank you.
Andrea Mengucci was on Esper Control in the Mono White deck. Amazonian was on Selesnya aggro and Mono White.
Hey, wait a minute. Weren't we going to not go through these deck lists?
Hey, I'm trying to find the damn top people. This is the top 16, so I got to scroll here. Hang on. Dupra, David Wynn. Glogowski was on Mono Blue Tempo and Mono Red Aggro. So there you go, Clues. He's half your boy. This is
half.
This is not all of the top 16, is it?
I'll give him a high 2.5.
I didn't see... Savic?
Yeah, I didn't either. It's advertised as the top 16 deck lists. I did find it.
Oh, here it is. It's because it has his name. Yeah, he was on Esper Control and Mono White. Yeah, okay, so there you go.
Okay.
And so, yeah, if you want to look at these, the Esper Dovin's Acuity deck was a big thing for a few players. I think Gabnazif played that.
Oh, look at that. Goblin Chain Whirler. That's great.
No, not Matt Nass. Gabe Nassif. What the hell? Here we go. He was on Team of Reclamation and the Esper Acuity deck, yeah. The Esper Acuity deck is everything Clues hates because it just gains life until you physically can't kill it.
That sounds awful.
And that's pretty much all it does, yeah. So, but yeah, if you want to check that out, the link is the link to, well, it's mtgesports.com/events. So there you go. Right? Right.
Right.
Okay, then.
All right.
So
now to go back in time slightly?
Yeah, now to go back in time slightly. On Wednesday.
Yes.
Mind you, this event started on Thursday.
Thursday.
So on Wednesday, this was dropped on us. Magic Esports tweeted, Owen Turtenwald will not be participating in the Mythic Invitational, and we are replacing him with Brian David Marshall. Which, okay.
Yeah, that's a thing that happened, and yeah. If you follow the responses to that tweet, it was met with widespread confusion. It was met with initially.
My first thought, okay, I'm not gonna lie, my first thought was good because I don't like Owen, I never have, because of personal interactions with him across multiple years. He was.
I can attest to that was in fact Chewie's first response.
Yeah. My second response is, oh crap, I hope he's okay. Like, because to miss something this big at the last minute means, like, family problems or personal injury or something. But, no one said anything, including Owen. So all we know is that BDM went in instead. And that's what we know.
Yeah, that's it as far as official news about this. To my knowledge, WotC has released no other statement about this. And to my knowledge, as of this recording, Owen himself has not commented on this.
Right. And yeah, and Pinball Witch said he's American, right? So there's not a passport issue or a visa issue like there was with Amaz.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that would have been figured out way before the day before. So
you would hope.
Yeah. So then 2 days later on Friday, Kotaku released an article. Now, we will say right now that this is, as far as Wizards has said, this does not have anything to do with why Owen Turtenwald didn't play in the event.
There is no official acknowledgement of that, yes.
Yeah, all I said was he's not playing, BDM is. Okay? Right. That's everything official.
Right.
That's everything official as of this recording. Are we being clear? If anyone else says, well, Owen wasn't because... No, you don't know that unless you were in the room when they made this decision or in the room when Owen was told. So, just getting that out there. Just getting that out there. But 2 days later, this article was released on Kotaku. And the headline is a nice clickbaity. Pro removed from $1 million Magic tournament accused of harassing women. I don't remember a Magic tournament being accused of harassing women.
It is... Okay, yeah, it could use an editor.
Yeah,
but
grammar.
It's an online publication. It always could use an editor.
Yeah. But, this the link, of course, is in the show notes for those of you that are in the audio version.
Yeah, what? But the...
Robot,
the,
be quiet.
The opening is, on Wednesday, one of the most prominent players in the Magic the Gathering scene was unceremoniously dropped from this weekend's first ever $1 million tournament for the strategy card game. Since then, as questions have been raised about the unspecified reasons behind Turtenwald's removal, sources have told Kotaku that the player has engaged in inappropriate behavior toward female players and fans for years.
And it goes on to say that Kotaku has been shown evidence of this and has, I think, three different witnesses that are claiming that, only one of which I believe is named. That's Mary Lauk. I hope I'm saying her name right. But,
So, yeah, there you go. Like we said, in the full interests of journalistic integrity, there is no official word that these two things are linked. Kotaku's headline would lead you to believe that they are, but officially, nothing has been said. And to be honest with you, there's a real good chance officially nothing will be said for quite some time. In fact, I would be shocked if WotC says anything about this possibly ever. There's a chance that Owen will, but WotC probably won't, just because lawyers.
Probably. So, yeah.
That being said, I am 100% certain that the people who were invited to this event, who either through whatever avenue they were invited to this event, I am 100% certain that they had to sign a contract that said WotC could remove them from this tournament at any time for any reason.
Yeah.
Because that's the way these things go.
So, yeah, that's heavy. It's extremely heavy, but if this is true, I'm glad it's out. And yeah, the first message that I sent to Bill and Clues about this was, would it be in poor taste of me to say something to the effect of, called it?
Yep, he sure did.
It is not a secret that I have a massive distaste for Owen Turtenwald. Because, as I said, I've done several three questions interviews with him over the years, all but one of which he was either a dickhead or a douchebag. Yeah.
I have interacted almost none with Owen over the years.
And the one that he wasn't was at a GP in Pittsburgh when he was so sick that he needed a puke bucket next to him in case he puked. He was perfectly decent that time, probably because they didn't have the energy to be a douchebag. So
that is
conjecture
on your part, I should say, in the
that is conjecture.
Of journalistic integrity.
I assume it was because he was so sick he didn't have the energy to be a dick, but you never know. He might have just been feeling charitable that weekend. I don't know, but yeah. There's a rule of thumb that I've heard from many people that you can tell someone's real character by how they treat waiters, but I think how they treat, like, I guess me in that case, I'm just this random guy that he doesn't know with a digital recorder trying to ask him magic questions. I think it's the same basic thing. And so, yeah, I have long had a distaste for Owen Turtenwald, and the fact that he kept doing amazingly well in magic and I kept having to say it on this show really pisses me off. So I'm not going to lie, I'm enjoying this in the interest of journalistic integrity. I'm digging this.
Yeah. I do have a couple of pros that I do not like based on interactions I've had with them, but I say their names occasionally anyway, and I don't feel good about it.
Yeah.
It's tough.
So yeah, but this has been a thing lately for this sort of thing to change. We have to call this behavior out.
Yes.
And this is an amazing first step. Call out one of the golden boys of magic and be like, hey, look at that. And I'm sure that there are all of the fanboys and whatnot who are like, oh, I didn't do that. Meh. But I don't care what you say. I care what these people say. Not the article, the victims. So, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it is, before the show, when we were odds and endsing, I had a soapbox I climbed on, and I shouted some things for a little while, and just to sum up, the most important thing we all need to recognize is that we really, really need to keep Wheaton's Law. Whether you like Will Wheaton or Pax from whence it came, when Wheaton's Law was first uttered, it doesn't really matter to me. There's a deep-seated truth in there, and that is don't be a dick. Just straight up. That's it. Let's just do that. If we could all just do that, things would be better. And I'll add a corollary to that, and that is if you want that to be the way things are, when you see someone being a dick, say something. So it is imperative on all of us.
And of course, you'll get the people, well, why didn't this person say this a long time ago? Well, I'm under the impression that they have.
Yeah. Yeah, and I find that in most cases, someone has been saying something for a long time and no one was listening.
Yep.
In general, it's not that these things just suddenly come out of nowhere. It's that suddenly people start paying attention, which are not the same thing at all. So there you go. That's, I believe, the downer portion of today's podcast.
I think so, yeah.
What do you say we move on to the not downer parts of today's podcast?
Yeah, hell yeah.
All right.
Spent too much time with his name in my face anyway. So the other thing that happened at PAX East that was magic related, in the interest of news, is the big War of the Spark panel.
Yes, that is totally a thing that occurred. I would now like to digress for a brief tangent on the panel. Can I talk about that?
By all means.
And my experiences with the panel. So one of the highlights for me of going to PAX, just about any PAX that I go to, is going to the Magic panel, because they generally have a panel, usually on Saturday or Sunday, usually midday or so, where they talk about world building and the new set that's coming out, and they have some preview cards and all kinds of neat stuff that they tell us. And I absolutely love going to these things. Absolutely love it. However, this year, I did not go to that panel. I really wanted to. When it was announced, I put it on my schedule that I needed to go to that panel, because I love going to the Magic panels. Even when I'm not playing Magic or not judging Magic or haven't even made it to an event in months, I'm still like, you know what? I enjoy this stuff. I'm going to go to that panel. Well, let's talk logistics, shall we? PAX East takes place at the BCEC, the Boston Convention and Exposition Center, I think, BCEC. I think that's what it is. Anyway, the BCEC. It's a real big building, kind of over, kind of near the shore in the south of Boston. And when it was originally, when PAX East was first moved there, it was in the middle of nowhere. There was nothing around it. But a lot of stuff is built up around it. Yeah.
I'm going to step away for just a second. So if you look up at the stream and see an empty chair, don't freak out.
Oh, no, that's fine. I figured you were checking out anyway.
And
so
the
you just go ahead. This is just me.
I'll be right back.
It's just me in the stream talking here. Okay. So, stream, good to see you. Now that Chewie's gone, I can actually tell you the real stuff. No. One of the things that goes on here, because it is a big convention with lots of people, is there is a security line that you have to go through to get in. And the security line consists of a cursory bag search to make sure nobody's bringing anything like crazy. You know, they're basically just looking for weapons. They're not looking to stop you from bringing in outside food or to bring in your foam sword. They don't care. And there's a metal detector. So you got to empty all your pockets into your bag, and then they look through the bag. You go through the metal detector. If you beep the metal detector, they give you the wave down with the wand, and then you get your bag back, and then you got to put everything back where it belongs. For us guys, got to take off your belt because the belt buckle's way too much metal, so it's going to go off. So that's always a big pain. Anyway. Because there is security trying to get in, Chewie, that is really loud, man. Because there is security trying to get in, yeah, that was like crazy crinkly. Because there is security trying to get in, the beginning of the day, you're standing in line for a long time if you want to get in. The panel was at 10:30 a.m. on the show floor.
Theoretically, it's 10:30.
We'll get to the theoretically part in a minute. The PAX Arena area of the show floor, not the Magic Arena at PAX area, but the PAX Arena area on the show floor. It's kind of in the middle of the show floor that you had to get to get into this. And it has limited seating. So if you actually wanted to get to that panel at 10:30, the doors don't open until 10, which means if you actually wanted to get there on time, you needed to be in line, and you needed to be in line a long time ago if you were going to do that. But I was checking out on Sunday because we had a late night Sunday flight. So we had to check out of our hotel Sunday morning. So I had to get up, get ready, get packed, check out of the hotel, go get in line, stand in line, get through security, get down to the show floor, get to the booth, get in line to get into the panel. And there is no way that was going to happen. In fact, when we finally did arrive in line, it took us something like, I don't know, like 45 minutes just to get through the line outside to get in. So it was just insane. There was no way I was making it to that panel. And that actually really, really bugged me. I really wish the panel would have been later in the day. I suspect it was done for logistical reasons. Okay. They had a tournament to run, and they didn't want to interrupt the ending of the tournament for, hey, let's go have a panel now and send you all away from this tournament coverage. Let's just get it out of the way in the morning. It may also have been that's when they could get scheduled for that space, because there's only so much space to do these things in. So I understand there were a lot of moving parts, a lot of logistical issues, but just because of the timing of it, there was no way in hell I was going to make it to that panel. And it made me sad.
Wasn't the panel in the same physical location as the
yes,
top four?
You were not here for the rest of this discussion. I encourage you to go listen to it.
But when you say, like, scheduling purposes, that they just had that area.
Yes.
They could have done it before or after, theoretically.
Right, but it would have interrupted the flow of the tournament, and I assume they didn't want to do that.
Yeah. From a...
I assume.
From, like, a hype standpoint, it makes a lot more sense to do the panel before and then have the tournament and have the final excitement of the finals and then stop.
Yeah, because, I mean, and then during the rest of the day, when you do have downtime between matches, you can talk about the panel and the cards and the new set and the new art. And here's another new card from the new set.
Which they did for apparently about 40 minutes, because that's when Mike and I went to get lunch.
Yes. Yes, they did. Now, my understanding is that there were some audio technical difficulties at the beginning of the panel, so the panel itself did not start on time. And I don't know if they made the panel abbreviated because of that, because usually panels are about an hour. And this time the panel clocked in at a cool 33 minutes because I watched it on the Twitch archive. And man, they were just like, here's like three sentences. You want to see a card? Here's a card. Hey, that card was cool. You want to see another card? Here's another card.
Yeah,
and
as someone that was watching it live, they had the countdown at the beginning.
Yeah.
And the countdown reset itself to 6 minutes, I think three times.
Oof. Oof.
Like, the joke was made that someone was looping Nexus of Fate, because it got down to, like, 3 minutes, and it jumped back to six. And I was like, wait, did that just change? Yeah. Well, damn. And then it got down to, like, I think it counted all the way down, and then got back to six. And we were like, what? And then it was at like 120 something, and it jumped back to six. And we were like, come on!
That said, I did watch the panel on Twitch today. It's good. It's worth your time. I think you should go and watch it if you haven't seen it.
You had sound the whole way through when you watched it later.
I did, yeah. It worked great.
After starting so late, we had Jimmy Wong come out and do this. And he winked, and we're like, we don't know why you're winking, you sexy man, you. And then it cut to the trailer, and we were like, okay, the mic is messed up, but we're going to have sound for the trailer. No, we had to watch the entire trailer for the first time with no audio.
Oh, man, it is way more powerful with the audio.
Oh, yeah, I know. Luckily, they showed it again at the end.
If you have not seen the trailer, and you are listening to this or watching this, stop. Pause this. Go watch the trailer.
Link is in the show notes.
Maybe wipe the tears from your eyes. Come back.
Yeah.
And then pick up where we are now, because good God, that is a really good trailer. I mean, they've been doing these kind of semi-animated trailer things for some time now. And the first time I saw one, I'm like, oh, that's really neat. It's kind of like the cards are pseudo brought to life. I see what they're doing here. It's really stylistic. I like it. It's interesting. They're telling a tale, because I kind of like the lore and the storyline behind Magic anyway. But this one, OMG, this was just, I was just left wanting more, just constantly. It was so well executed. It was so well animated. The music was perfect for it.
For anyone that's ever been a Blizzard fan, this was a Blizzard trailer. Straight up. It was CG. It was really well done. It was emotional. It tugged at your feels.
It did, all the feels.
It yanked on your feels.
It did.
There was some fan service in there, or maybe whatever the opposite of that is. Deck faded. And yeah, it looked like a I have watched War of the... World of Warcraft trailers. I have zero truck with World of Warcraft. And had tears in my eyes because of how well done they are. This is just like that, except I know and love these characters. So
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally go watch it. We can't do it justice.
We really can't. But because there was no audio or anything, people were like, and when there was no audio, so we knew there were technical difficulties, someone was like, is this running backwards? Are they backing this up? And I'm like, no, it's obviously run backwards on purpose. Did you not see the old Dead Island trailer? Remember that original Dead Island trailer, Clues? Did you ever see that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did.
Yeah, that was intense, and it was backwards. I was like, it's going to be something like that. And but again, we had nothing. We were just watching. We were like, oh. And then it got to the thing that happens at the end of the trailer. We were like, oh. And then it cut back to the panel. And Jimmy's like, and we're like, I don't know what you're saying, you bastard. And he introduced people. And at some point, we got audio back. And then they kept sitting there. He's like, apparently there's some audio problem on the stream, so we're just hanging out for a minute. And yeah. And then I think it was over before 11:30. I think it was at like 11:15 or something. They were like, and they go, all right, go watch the top four of the Invitational. And I was like, was that it?
That was in fact it. So yeah, definitely check out the trailer. Check out the panel if you can. Brief. I'm going to give you the briefest of recaps of the storyline as we know it at present, just so that when we talk about some of the cards that were previewed, because I'm sure we'll take a quick look at a couple of these cards, just so that we're all on the same page. Nicol Bolas, remember that guy? Remember that word I can't repeat because we can't swear on Monday Night Magic? Wants all the power, not some of the power, all the power. And he's been planning. He's been planning for a long, long time. And so he's gathered some resources, and those resources include, but are not limited to, the Planar Bridge, mm-hmm. which allows him to move stuff between planes. The Immortal Army? Is that what it's called? The army on Amon Khet.
The Eternals.
The Eternal. Yeah, the Eternals. He's got them. And he's got
the Immortal Sun.
What's it called? The Immortal Sun. That's where the Immortal comes in. The Immortal Sun. He has brought those things to Ravnica because he wants to kill planeswalkers and take their sparks, so he can use the sparks to fuel a thing called the Elder Spell. Yes, and the Elder Spell is going to do something.
Or other.
Not going to be good for us, is what we know. And that's where things are. The call has gone out. Someone picked up the bat phone, and they have called, like, all the planeswalkers ever and said, hey, rumble happening here on Ravnica. We kind of need to take out Bolas before he kills us all, so get here so we can take him out. But it's kind of what Bolas wanted, because that's why the Immortal Sun is here, so you can walk in, but you don't walk out. It is totally Hotel California here on Ravnica. And there you go. So that's the story. And so as we see new cards, they will depict bits and pieces of that story as it goes. A reminder, War of the Spark contains 37 planeswalkers. Because one of the planeswalkers, the first planeswalker, I think, who was actually previewed for us at this was the new Tezzeret. Mm-hmm. Tezzeret, Master of the Bridge. Do you by any chance have the...
No, because we'll get into cards in a minute.
Okay. But Tezzeret is technically in the set because he's the Biobox promo.
Right. So.
Yeah.
War of the Sparks preview season is going to be unlike any preview season you've ever seen.
Yes.
And that's... So here, let me show you here. I've been waiting for them to make this announcement. I've known about this since the freaking 1st of March. When we got the Manipool preview cards. And it said, don't tell anyone you have preview cards until after March 15th. So I was like, they're going to tell people about this on the 15th. This will be awesome. And the 15th came and went. There was no announcement. And I'm going, can I tell people about this? I don't think I can. It doesn't say not to, but no one else is. Damn it. Finally, on the 27th. we get this, that every card in the set is being previewed. All of them. You know how usually they show a bunch of the big mythics and rares and a few of the uncommons, and like maybe a common or something, or cycle of them for Marshall to do in his article, and that's it. And then on the last day, here's the rest of the set. It's like the other half just of the set.
Blah.
Just yeah. Bleh, right there. Just bleh. Well, this time, every card is being given to someone to preview. Every card. Without exception. Which is massive. And they're being previewed in a certain order on purpose. Instead of just, okay, we want to show like this cool rare on the second week of previews, so here, it's sometime this week. I was like, can you do Monday? No. We could do Tuesday. Okay, yeah, do Tuesday then. No. These are very rigidly scheduled because they're telling the entire story of the set through the cards, piece by piece, by going to... So every day, they're going to have a different thing depicted on all the cards that are previewed that day. So, like, for instance, Manipul previews go up on April the 8th. That's next Monday. And all five of our preview cards depict different aspects of one event that's happening that all of the cards previewed on Monday, April 8th will be showing. Isn't that cool? That's freaking cool. And that's how it's going to be every day. So, when there are leaks and unofficial previews and spoilers and crap, you are actually crapping on someone's day.
Yes, many people's day in this particular case.
Well, for the big leak that's happened, yeah, so.
Yeah.
But, like, just do us a favor, for all of us content creators and everyone out there, if you see an unofficial preview card, I don't care how cool it is, please don't share it. Let that person share it. Don't be part of spreading that plague. All right? Just don't. If you go, was this official or not? Then maybe don't share it.
Right.
Maybe look around first and see if you can find a source. Please, I'm asking. I don't have to worry about that, I don't think, because none of my cards are big and flashy enough that people are going to want to leak them. But...
It is my understanding. I've heard rumors that 100% of the set has been spoiled as of right now. That all of it has been leaked. I can't verify that because I haven't gone looking because I don't want to know. If you know, don't tell me. I don't want to know. Don't send me a link. Don't talk about it. I don't want to know. I want to experience this being released one at a time like they intended. I want to see it unfold. I want that to happen.
That is the first I've heard of that. I have...
Again, it's just rumors that I've heard, and if it's true, I am totally not happy about it. I think it's absolutely awful.
I kind of wish you had just kept that to yourself, Clues, honestly.
Well, just I was just saying it so that people wouldn't, you know, tell me things, because I don't send me... And on that subject, here's one thing. I do want to make a complaint, and it's a very specific complaint that there isn't a solution to. This is just me ranting. I know there's not a solution to this. If you look at the WotC official card image gallery, it always lags by a day.
Right.
And it always lags by a day for a reason, because they've given the preview cards to certain content creators. They want to use that to drive traffic to those content creators. They don't want to steal their thunder by having the cards on the WotC gallery. But that means if there was something that was previewed today and I don't remember where it happened, I have a lot of trouble finding it after the fact. It would be great if there were a way to get those into the gallery sooner, but doing so would defeat the purpose of what they're doing. So I recognize Correct. That it is not a problem with the solution. I'm just saying it annoys me from time to time. Usually my go-to is I go to one of the unofficial spoiler sites that happens to have a whole bunch of them, and they put them up as they get them. But now I'm afraid to go there because I've heard this rumor that the entire set has been spoiled. And if that's the case, then they totally have all those cards there and I don't want to see them.
So I just checked the one that I know is your favorite and it doesn't, but it does have all the other
things. Good. Then hopefully that is a untrue rumor, and I hope that's the case.
It's asked in the chat, what if WotC could link each day to the sites that have previews that day? No one cares.
That would be beautiful.
Well,
I would take that.
Not like, here's the card and here's your preview, because no one's going to click on that.
No. Just say, here are sites that have cards today. Go visit them.
And they do that on the main page a good chunk of the time.
I also find WotC's website so hard to actually navigate that I usually don't go there.
Yeah. But most days when there are preview cards going up that day, you know, the bundle of links on the main page, Daily MTG, will have some of those if you're big enough and, you know, have important cards. Like, I doubt you'll find the mana pool on the main page. Because, like I said, our cards are not big and splashy and awesome, but they are important for telling the story. Okay, that's a lie, too. They're important for the world building of what's going on. Let's go with that. But anyway. But yeah, if they could be like, hey, here's where all your preview cards are coming in. That would be cool. But they've got, like, I saw Blake respond to a tweet about something. It's something like 200 and some different sources that are giving out cards.
Wow.
Like, over the course, because it's 3 weeks this time. So, yeah. Like, I don't know, man. Yeah, I don't know, man.
Anyway, point is, some cards have been previewed. The official preview gallery is up on the Mothership on WotC's site. Go have a look.
Yeah.
That's what I'll say.
So, yeah, there's also going to be this page, which you can get to. Hang on, let me show you how to get here. So you go to dailymtg.com, okay?
Okay.
And you scroll down to right here. War of the Sparks story scenes. Massive. Hard to miss if your eyes work, okay? If your eyes don't work, hopefully you have a screen reader or something. So you click on that, and it brings you here. Now we have Act 1, and you have Act 1, Scene 1, Scene 2, and Scene 3. This is what they're talking about. Every day they're going to add a scene.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah. And they're going to have not all the cards from each scene, but a smattering of cards to set up the scene of what's going on. So, Act 1, Scene 1, we have these cards that show, I guess, people starting to invade. And then Act 2, Scene 2 is the actual invasion with the Planar Bridge opening right over the Chamber of the Guild Pact, utterly destroying it. Whoops. And the actual invasion starting. And then Act 1, Scene 3 is Ignite the Beacon to call all of the Planeswalkers here to help. And those are the three scenes we have right now. And it's really freaking cool. Isn't it clues?
It is.
Yay. So, this is, like I said, this is a new thing they're doing to show the progression of the story. Because if you just look at cards in the card image gallery, it's just cards in alphabetical order. You don't get any feel for the story here in order, so that's what this page
is. It's a more story ordery kind of way here.
Yeah, at least this won't have all the cards, but it will have enough to set it up. Pretty cool.
Pretty cool, actually. I'm very stoked about that. So much so, I'm going to leave it up in this tab for the next several weeks. But I have many tabs.
He does, yeah. So, outside of that, of course, we've got a lot of cards. Clues mentioned Tezzeret. Hey, you want to talk about that while we're here?
Yeah, I do want to talk about Tezzeret for a couple of reasons. First of all, it was the first Planeswalker that they showed us in the official
card
previews.
They showed us.
The first, that's true. The first card. No, they showed us the basic lands first.
Those don't count.
In that panel. I still, to this day, will say, WotC, give me a preview card, give me a basic land, and I will talk for at least 10 minutes about the aspects of the art in that basic land. I'm not going to beg, but I'm begging.
It'll be an island, just to spite me.
It will be, just to spite me. And you know what? I will talk the hell out of that island. That's what I will do. But Tezzeret. Tezzeret, Master of the Bridge, who costs 4 a blue and a black for a 5 loyalty cost, or a 5 loyalty planeswalker. The most interesting thing here is that this planeswalker has a static ability on it that says creature and planeswalker spells you cast have affinity for artifacts. Stop right there. There are some of you who are going, oh my God, affinity's back.
No.
Affinity is back on this card. Tezzeret is only sort of in the set because he's kind of in charge of the bridge. Okay. He's not like in the fray. He's in charge of the bridge. So he's just there, kind of off to the side. Look at him there. He's doing his affinity thing. But all of the planeswalker spells in this set will have a static or a triggered ability, which is neat, and it's a piece of design space that they've never gone into before. It's like there's an enchantment stapled to every planeswalker, which I think is really neat. I think that has a lot of neat aspects to it, particularly since, as we'll get to later on, you may end up with planeswalkers who are on the field who can't actually activate any of their abilities, not even just profitably, just can't do it. Anyway, this Tezzeret has the following abilities. +2, Tezzeret, Master of the Bridge, deals X damage to each opponent. Where X is the number of artifacts you control, you gain X life. This is very reminiscent of one of Tezzeret's earlier cards, so that's kind of neat. -3, return target artifact card from your graveyard to your hand. I don't know that he's ever had exactly that text, but again, it's a very Tezzeret-y thing to do. -8. Exile the top 10 cards of your library. Put all artifact cards from among them onto the battlefield. Once again, very, very Tezzeret-like thing for him to do. This is a mythic, but not all planeswalkers in this set are mythic. After all, they got to cram 36 of those bastards in here. So some are mythic. In fact, the numbers that they told us, 3 are mythic, not including Tezzeret, because he's not included in this count. He's number 37. 3 are mythic, 13 are rare, and 20 are uncommon. Uncommon planeswalkers exist in this set.
Now,
we
talked about this a couple weeks ago when they first told us that there were going to be 36 planeswalkers in the set, and I remember saying that I don't like that because that, like, it really takes away from what planeswalkers have been and are. I understand that, like, logistically there's no way to test 36 normal planeswalkers. And the way that they've managed to make uncommon and rare planeswalkers design-wise is really neat, but I still don't like it.
See, if they didn't have the static or triggered ability, I would agree with you. I would absolutely agree with you. Because I want to move to one of the uncommon planeswalkers if we could. Do you mind? Can we talk about one of them now? You're never going to guess which one it is. It's a very unlikely one for me to call. Because although he dresses really well...
Okay, there we go. I was going to say, Clues, get to the point so I can find it.
Yeah, although he dresses really well, my God, was he like the most garbage planeswalker like ever. Tybalt, the new Tybalt. Tybalt, Rakish Instigator. For 2 and a red, you get a 5 loyalty planeswalker. 2 and a red, 3 mana for a 5 loyalty planeswalker, and he's uncommon. His stapled on enchantment ability, your opponents can't gain life.
Very
he has
Tybalt.
One ability. Yeah, very Tybalt. One ability, one and only one. And it is a minus ability, and it's -2. You can't even activate his ability enough to make him go away, and that is on purpose. Create a 1/1 red devil creature token with, quote, when this creature dies, it deals 1 damage to any target, unquote. Holy crap, they have made a good Tybalt 3 mana planeswalker. I'm as shocked as all of you are. Because you know what? You would just about pay 3 mana. No, in fact, you would. You would pay 3 mana for an uncommon enchantment that said your opponents can't gain life. That would be a playable card. Maybe not a great card, but a playable card. And they've added on an ability that is playable here. So it is great. I actually really like this Tybalt card. And this is kind of a pretty good illustration of the template for uncommon planeswalkers. If you took off that static ability and all he had was his minus ability that did something like this, I would agree with you, Chewie. I would not like that with the planeswalkers.
Oh, no, no. I love the way they've managed to do it. Like I said, design-wise, yeah, it's brilliant. But from a planeswalker feels perspective, I don't like it. Because planeswalkers have always been the big, the amazing, the flashy. Yes, they've always been mythic. Okay, they were rare at first, but there was no mythic then, so shut up. They would have been mythic if mythic was a thing.
Look, man, in the Avengers, somebody's got to be Hawkeye.
Dude, Hawkeye would be a mythic.
Would he?
Because there's only like five or six of them, so yeah, he would be.
I think he'd be rare.
But in...
There are only three mythics. I think your mythics clearly...
In a normal Avengers set, Clues, in a normal set.
Okay, fair.
Block, actually, because there's that many planeswalkers. Anyway, the point is... that I really feel like from the planeswalker... It really takes away from what planeswalkers are in Magic. Now... There's no way to do this with 36 normal planeswalkers that would make any sense. There just isn't. So, like I said, from a design standpoint, I love what they've done. I love it. It looks like, from the ones we've seen thus far, the uncommon ones... Now, all 36 planeswalkers have a static ability or a triggered ability. They've got a line of text that's not a loyalty ability. Okay? Okay. It looks like the uncommon ones have minus abilities with no plus...
Right.
It looks like the rare ones have a plus and a minus, but no limit break, and the mythic ones are normal planeswalkers with two abilities and a limit break and the non-loyalty ability.
I don't know. Jace kind of has a limit break, and he's only rare.
Hang on. Where is he? He's in blue.
He's up in blue. Up in blue. There you go.
Yeah, but he's the Guild Pact.
Yeah, and is terrible at his job. How terrible at his job? We blew up his job.
Yeah, and he didn't die because he wasn't there doing his job. So
exactly. You had one job, Jace. It was to stand where we painted that X.
Okay, so let me rephrase then. Instead of using the term limit break, because apparently that's not it. It looks like the uncommon ones have...
two abilities. One ability.
One loyalty ability, and everyone has the standard whatever ability. One loyalty ability, probably minus, no plus. The rares look like they're going to have all plus, one each plus and minus, and the mythics are going to have the normal assortment. K.
The real test. The real test will be, let me
reiterate. That's what it looks like. We haven't seen them all yet.
The real test for me is, can we make a good Chandra? Because she is actually a really hard card to design. It's very easy to make a bad Chandra. It's very easy to make a broken Chandra. It's hard to make a good Chandra.
Yeah, they've done it, what, twice out of their five attempts?
Yeah, maybe once. But yeah, it's tough. Real tough. So anyway, there you go. That's all I really wanted to discuss card-wise for now. I mean, we're not really we're going to go in-depth into all of these cards. And if you want to talk about a couple more, Chewie, we can. But I'm sure you're going to do that. You're going to be all over that on the mana pool.
I mean, a bunch of these cards are really cool, but not like Monday Night Magic talk about really cool. I guess we could talk about Liliana.
She's pretty good.
Yeah. So Liliana, Dreadhorde General, for 4 black-black, is one of the three mythics. We know that the mythics are Liliana, Gideon, and Nicol Bolas. Because Rosewater, of course, answered that in his Tumblr, because Rosewater can't not answer questions.
Fair.
But, she starts with 6 loyalty for 6 mana. Yeah. Whenever a creature you control dies, draw a card. That's freaking sick.
Seems really good.
Yeah. Plus one, create a 2/2 zombie. Okay.
Seems good.
Yeah, that's Liliana. Minus 4, each player sacrifices 2 creatures. Whoo, that seems good. Yeah. And then Minus 9. Each opponent chooses a permanent they control of each permanent type and sacrifices the rest. Which, this is a card, but I can never remember what the hell the name of the card is.
Yeah, it was back in...
I think it was a white card?
No. No, was it?
I can't remember.
Because I thought that there was a Liliana-like ability that did this back in Rise of the Eldrazi, maybe? Because it was this kind of effect that made the Hell Vault get shattered. That you had a choice. You could choose this thing or that thing, and the rest goes. And that's from a story perspective, from a flavor perspective, that's how we opened the Hell Vault.
Pinball Witch says Cataclysm. Okay, this is the one I was thinking of, yeah. Two white, each player chooses from the permanents he or she controls an artifact, creature, an enchantment, and land, and sacrifices the rest. So yeah, this is from Exodus. So this is the one I was thinking of, yeah.
Okay, fair. Fair. Now, I was thinking of when Liliana did this back in Innistrad days with the Hellvault.
She also said Tragic Arrogance, but you get to pick stuff for that person, so it's the same effect, but who gets to do the picking is different. And that's also a white card. Huh. The White Gear Hulk. Yeah, that's another one. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, now I gotta go find that one I'm thinking of.
Okay, wait. Let's go to Advanced Search and add in the rules text. Among permanents, if you spell it right, permanents type. Each. And let's just do a search for that. Surely that will not give us that many cards.
Oh, surely not.
That gave us zero, actually, it turns out.
Yep.
Okay, how about we lose the word type? Cataclysm, Cataclysmic Gear Hulk, yeah. Do-do-do. Yeah, clues. I think you're thinking of something else.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll find it eventually someday. Okay.
All right. Whoops. That's the scenes. There's Tezzeret. Okay, so you want to do... Let's talk about some of these other cards real quick, because they're promos and stuff. So we've got event promos.
Oh!
What?
Oh, I was going to mention that, too. If you look at the number on Tezzeret, it gives you at least a rough idea of how many promo-ish cards are outside of the set.
He's 275 of 264. So there are at least 11. So Open House and Draft Weekend have promos. Friday Night Magic. I don't think these are FNM promos anymore. I think these are going to go in the promo packs, or is that later? I can't remember when that takes place. Remember they're changing it to the promo packs that stores can give out at will?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't remember if these go in that yet or not. But Planeswalker Weekend, we get the sweet Full Art Time Wipe and Karn's Bastion without Full Art. And then there's packaging. Like I said, what these cards do, we'll talk about that on the Manipul. That's not what Monday Night Magic is really for. But we should talk about the mechanics clues. You want to?
Yeah. Yeah, let's mechanics it up.
All right, so we already talked about the Planeswalker. Oh, uncommon Planeswalkers have only two abilities. Oh. Okay, well, there you go.
Increases loyalty, yeah, okay.
Neither of them increase. Hey, look at that, I was right. Context yeah. clues. I haven't actually read this article because I knew what all the mechanics did.
Wait, I'm context what now?
Damn it. You got me.
You're welcome. Right, okay.
So then we have amass. Clues, you want to tell us about amass?
Yeah, let's talk about amass. There is a new keyword, amass, that is showing up. And, okay, so there's an invading zombie army. So we need a way to represent an invading zombie army. And congratulations, amass is the way to do it. So this card that they have here, oh yeah, you've got it up on screen, Relentless Advance. For 3 and a blue, you have a sorcery that you're casting because you're blue and a horrible person. It is a common. It says amass 3, put 3+1+1 counters on an army you control. What's that you say? You don't have an army? Well, if you don't control one, create a 0/0 black zombie army creature token first. So there will be cards that will say amass followed by a number. There's even one I think that's been previewed that is amass X, so that you can get X number of counters on a thing. And sure. If you've got an existing zombie army, you can go ahead and just put those counters on that existing zombie army. If you don't, congratulations, you get a zombie army. And go ahead and put your counters on it. Ta-da. And so you'll just make a whole bunch of dudes that you can kill us all with is kind of the plan.
Except it's not... Mechanically, it's not a whole bunch of dudes.
But it can be. Every time you have an amass, you can make another dude.
No.
Oh, no, you're right. You only grow that dude.
Yeah. So you have...
if you don't control one. Okay,
so
yeah.
So, flavorfully, you have an army. This army is treated as a single unit.
Right.
And amassing... You amass your army, which means you make your army bigger, which is your single unit. If you don't have an army yet, then you start amassing your army. That's why it says if you... So the full rules text of the card is amass 3, full stop. Everything else was reminder text. So without shenanigans, and I know there are shenanigans, he brings them up here, but without shenanigans, just using amass cards, there's no way to get a second army. You just only have one. And that's because if they were trying to have multiple armies, they would have to reintroduce flanking, and you just can't do that. See, because flanking
would they?
Strategy. Because if you have multiple armies, you're going to end up splitting part of your army off to go. Anyway, it was funny the first time. It's not funny anymore.
Fair.
So that
you appear to
and
expect.
I got 5 bits for a flanking joke. Thank you, Pinball Wheel.
Okay, fair. By the way, can you scroll down just a little bit on what you've got on screen? I need to see these 3 tokens lined up. I absolutely adore what they've done with this token art. Do you see it?
Yeah.
Do you see
you're
another one?
The army
it's just,
in the
just like the one
art.
Guy, and then in the second one, there's like several guys, and then in the last one, it's like, oh, crap. Oh, God, that is so great.
That is pretty
absolutely
great.
Absolutely
yeah.
great. Whew, boy, that makes me happy. I'm sorry. Anyway, so there's amass. It is going to be a mess. The amass. Good luck with the zombies.
Yeah, and amass is one of those cards, or one of those abilities that's tacked on to other things.
Yeah.
Like, do a thing, amass one. And also, right. you get cards like the Dreadhorde Invasion here, which I think is a different enough amass card that it's worth talking about. For one and a black.
That's fair.
It's a rare enchantment that says at the beginning of your upkeep, you lose one life and amass one. So remember, amass one means you add a counter to your army. If you don't have an army, you make an army and add a counter to it. So it's just every turn you amass one, which means every turn your army gets a little bigger. And whenever a zombie token you control with power 6 or greater attacks... It gains lifelink until end of turn. Well, hey, how about that? The zombie army is a zombie token. Oh, God. Why do you have to bother clues with rules questions in the middle of an episode? It was asked, how does the mass work with divine visitation? Clues. We have
yeah,
to finish
okay.
the show.
This will just take a second.
Are
I'll
you
tell
sure?
you what, how I think this works. Yeah.
Okay.
So Divine Visitation is an enchantment that says if one or more creature tokens would be created under your control, that many 4/4 white angel creature tokens with flying and vigilance are created instead. I think if you attempt to amass, and amass is like, hey, put a counter on a thing, and you're like, I don't have a thing, and it goes, okay, then make yourself a zombie. Then Divine Visitation goes, no, that zombie, instead make it a 4/4 white angel creature token with flying and vigilance. And then you're like, I need to put these counters on something, but I can't because I have no army. And then you just don't do anything at that point. I think it just gives you a free angel.
That's what I was thinking as well, but I wasn't going to go digging through the rules.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's how that works, but I am not sure because we have not actually seen this happen yet in a real-life situation. I don't think the angel can get the counter because the angel is not an army.
Right, and it says put it on an army.
Yeah, So I don't think you're allowed to put it there.
That was my thought as well. It could be that we're missing something, or it could be that they've had to tinker with the rules, which we'll get in the update bulletin.
Yeah. So stand by for when that happens. I'm sure it will be addressed.
All right. Proliferate is back, which makes sense when there's a bazillion planeswalkers in the set.
Boy, howdy.
Some of which have no way to add loyalty. So proliferate. Hey.
Yep. Also, proliferate has gotten a slight tweak. So it used to be, if I'm not mistaken, that proliferate, you would choose a permanent and then you would increase the number of counters of one of the types of counters that it has. But now it's like all the counters that are there, increase them all. So if you had something correct. That had more than one kind of counter, you're doing all of them now.
Yeah. And that says that right here, actually.
Oh, yeah, there it is.
Yeah. So now, like, for instance, if there were, let's say an artifact creature that had +1/+1 counters and charge counters before you had to pick one when you proliferated. Now you just add one of each if you choose that permanent.
Now, this could backfire on you. You could be in, say, a commander game and have experience counters. You remember those?
Yeah.
And poison counters because one of your opponents is a total jerk. And go, you know what? I need more experience counters. Oh, crap. I'm going to get more poison, too.
Correct.
Yeah, that would suck.
Also, energy, I don't think while we're just talking about counters that go on players.
Yeah, heck, why not?
So there you go. We've got planeswalkers, amass, and proliferate, and that's it for mechanics. But if you think about it, at least that's probably enough. I really like amass, like, in limited, I think. I think that'll be pretty cool.
So let me tell you what I like, what I'm thinking about doing, and I'm sure I am not the only person who is thinking this. Dozens of people have thought of this. This is not an original thought on my part in any way, shape, or form, but I thought of it myself, and so I want to talk about it. I've been thinking about building some new commander decks, and one of the thoughts that I had was, hey, you know, there's going to be a set with like 36 new planeswalkers. I should make a 5-color planeswalker deck. Yes, I think I should. I think that's a great idea. Because there's going to be a bajillion of these things. So maybe better off with a 4-color planeswalker deck, then I don't have to put Jace in it. Yeah, that's my plan.
Okay, then. So there you go. That's the mechanics. Did we actually say what proliferate was? I don't think we did. Proliferate says, choose any number of permanents and or players, okay? Not target, choose. That's important.
Yep.
Then give each of those players or permanents another counter of each kind already there. So it's just, hey, all of the stuff that has counters, boom, add one. There you go. Nice and simple. It's got a lot of words, and proliferate is kind of hard to say multiple times. Proliferate, but like it's easy to grok. You just all the stuff you want to have an extra counter just gets another counter of all the types. Cool.
Speaking of which, Chewy, do you know who actually does counters right? Do you know who is your friend and mine? Who's everybody's best friend?
No.
A Johnny. Did you look at a Johnny the Greathearted? Johnny's got your back, man. Totally got your back.
He's gold. Hang on. There he
is. He's gold. He's all the way at the bottom. Yeah. Look at him there. Look at him there. He is the most friendly kitty ever. Look at that guy. Look at that -2 ability. It's glorious.
Would you like absolutely to share with the class clues?
A Johnny, the Greathearted, 4/2, a green and a white. You get a 5 loyalty, a Johnny. He is rare. Creatures you control have vigilance. That's great. Ajani, I like that. You're watching out for us. We're worried about the crackback. It's great. +1, you gain 3 life. See, having a cat actually gives you more life. I like it. -2, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control and a loyalty counter on each other planeswalker you control. Look at that. Look at that. You got all of the planeswalkers you got out there, all your uncommon planeswalkers keep spinning down. You know what? Get him a counter. It's great. Because a Johnny, he's your buddy. I like a Johnny.
Clearly. I like the Cruel Celebrant, but, you know.
Eh, I like a Johnny.
Good for you. Okay, so let's get away from War of the Spark, shall we? Is that everything with War of the Spark?
Can you get away from War of the Spark? Can we actually planeswalk away? No.
No, because the Immortal Sun is here and it's screwing
That's
us
right.
all up.
It's literally what it does.
Okay, let's see. Promos, mechanics, how the prees work, scenes, card image. Yeah, that was everything. Go watch the trailer. Go watch the trailer. Okay.
Yeah. One last thing, I think.
Oh, yeah, there's happened. One more thing that happened at PAX East.
Yes.
And it is right here. Pastimes apparently ran an MCQ.
Yes.
Which is, I know people are still complaining about the new terminology. Mythic Championship Qualifier, MCQ is a PTQ, but it's an MCQ now. So start right. calling it that. That way, just everyone is on the same page, okay? It's an MCQ. It's an MCQ. Okay? Okay.
Oh, is it an MCQ?
Yes.
Huh.
Totally. I forgot what I was saying. Right. But apparently, they ran a Mythic Championship qualifier at PAX East, and Emma Handy won. Oh, wait, I'm on the wrong screen. There we go. So, yeah, Emma Handy
I was waiting for it to come up. There we go.
Yeah, she's what is she now? A commentator for Star City Games, right?
It sounds right. I don't know. I haven't watched coverage in a bit.
I seem to remember that being a thing. And she's been a writer for them for a while. And there you go. She's now going to her first Mythic Champion. Try that again. Her first Mythic Championship. There we go. And it'll be Barcelona.
Sweet.
So there you go. That's awesome. Congrats to her.
Indeed.
Yeah. All right. So that's War of the Spark. I don't need that. That's War of the Spark. I don't need that. All that is left, I do believe, is because for some reason, there was a Magic Fest this weekend.
There apparently was.
And it was Magic Fest Calgary, where Grand Prix Calgary happened. Because remember, the tournament is still a Grand Prix, so when I say GP Calgary, everybody thinks they're clever. Like, oh, I thought it was called Magic Fest. Shut your stupid face. The tournament is GP Calgary. It happened at the event, which is Magic Fest Calgary. Okay? I get this, like, once every 4 days. The tournament is a GP. All right?
Did you get it today, Chewy?
No, but I'm almost certain someone was just about to say it in chat.
Chat, can you get on that for me?
Chat, I will have you timed out. anyway, I forgot what I was going to say. Right, so this was...
You were going to say that it was modern, and yes, that we had 958 players at GP Calgary.
Yeah. There you go. And it looks like,
looks like the deck lists might actually be in order, by the way.
Yeah, let's do the day two breakdown first, because Modern has been...
Oh, I spoke too soon.
Sort of bowing under the weight of the Phoenix here in recent weeks. And it's backing off a little bit. You remember, I said a couple weeks ago, maybe last week, that the Is It Phoenix deck...
It is.
Could potentially be warping the metagame enough to where it might in the future require some sort of banhammer addressing. Because unlike all the other times people were like, oh, this deck needs to be banned, it's too powerful. Is It Phoenix was kind of getting there. Like, the results were showing that the people that were saying it this time were right, unlike all the other times people say that when the results don't show it.
A blind squirrel finds an acorn now and then.
Yeah, if you, I guess if you complain about whatever the big deck is and say it's too powerful long enough, eventually there will be one that's too powerful. But the metagame is starting to adjust like it's supposed to. Hey! That's what happens! That's why I was very careful when I said it might potentially be powerful enough that it might need to have something done about it. But I didn't say it needs to be banned! No. No, because the meta is adjusting. So in GP Calgary, we had, for day two, we had 17.6% of the field was playing Izzet Phoenix, which is, I think, down from the last big modern tournament. I'm pretty sure.
Feels like it's down.
Yeah, well, I'd have to go look, but I swear I think this was in the 20s at the last one. I'm pretty sure. Clues, feel free to go check that out, since, you know, I'm showing this.
Yeah, I wouldn't even know where to go.
What? Well, you start at the link that's in the show notes for Calgary, and then you go back.
I guess I could just go back to 8.
Yeah.
That'll never bite him in the... Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, the next two most popular decks were Dredge and Grixis Shadow. Oh, no, that's a lie. These are not in order. Jesus Christ. Burn was actually the next most popular deck. Hey!
Yes, Burn!
Then it was Dredge and Grixis Shadow, and then Humans. Nope, then Blue-White Control, then Humans. Excuse me.
What the hell format is this? Not that. I'm looking at this. I'm sorry. Sorry, I didn't mean to speak out loud there.
Oh, okay. I was like...
I'm used to spending a lot of time alone, and I talk to myself a lot, okay? Sorry. Sorry. Go on.
So there... Note to people, this is not how you make a pie chart. Please put them in descending order of bigness, would you please, for God's sake? I understand having the other at the end, but when you have the big one, and then these two big ones, and then a bigger one... Oh, look, there's a green Tron, too, that was also the third most popular. Jesus Christ. Okay, never mind. They're still figuring out their coverage thing. The fact that there is a day two metagame breakdown is actually really cool. But they're not in any kind of order at all. But okay, let's go look at what's going on here. If we go to...
All right, I'm sorry. We were looking at... Is it Phoenix?
Yes.
This is up.
It's up?
This is up. Yeah, okay. So I went back. And this is... God, is this a GP in, I want to say, LA? You got to go back a couple of events to find this thing. But the most recent one, Is it Phoenix, was 10% of the field.
Oh, no. LA is older. Go to either Bilbao or Tampa Bay. Hang on.
I thought
do
I
we
back
have
a... Because Bilbao or Tampa Bay, is that event 8? But 8, I thought, was standard.
Okay, there's not a... Modern analysis? Was this it? Oh, no, it was 10%. No, that's L.A. Hang on.
Yeah, that's L.A. That's the one I was just looking at. Oh, do they have a link that's busticated? Because here's Tampa. If I click on Modern Analysis, they've got a link that's busticated.
Okay, so this most massive modern metagame matchup analysis yet is from GPLA. But it's on the Tampa Bay.
Yeah, it's linked from the Tampa Bay one. Yeah, that's...
Oh, it says metagame and matchup percentages from the previous modern GP. Son of a whore. Oh, here it is. Here it is. Right here. Is it Phoenix at GP Tampa was 19.5, so it is dropping slightly. I knew it was closer to 20, damn it.
All right, fair enough. I'm glad that we spent the time in that rabbit hole.
It's right there. Yeah. So anyway, they talk about... What is this? This is the top 8. Here we go. They talk about in this day two breakdown how the meta is shifting. The meta game around it is still changing. Green black mid range and blue white control are propping up more and more as decks. I guess I'm supposed to say, with a variety of answers, are looking to fight through the variety of threats Phoenix is producing. Humans and spirits are rising again after adapting and adding more ways to fight through the thing in the ice and the shrinking number of gut shots in Is It Phoenix. So you see, as I said, the meta is still warping, it's still shifting, it's still moving.
Still scape shifting.
And it's possible that it will... they'll figure out how to get around Is It Phoenix. And if not, then it might still be warping the meta too much. Yeah. That was the whole point, was... the whole point of a metagame is that it shifts and moves in response to things that are going on, and that's what's happening against the Is It Phoenix deck. It might not be enough, but it's not... you can't just go, ban it! Because we're not there yet, calm down. Okay? Okay.
Hashtag stop the top.
Alright, so, GP Calgary was won by Attila Fur. I hope that's how you say his name, because that looks like how you say his name.
It's totally how it looks, yes.
But he was running a Jund Breach Titan, which is apparently a deck of his own creation, or at least they said it was unique.
Yes.
So it's a Jund deck that runs Through the Breach and Primeval Titan.
Yep.
And one Scapeshift. And one Woodfall Primus, which I think is a sick tech. You remember Woodfall Primus clues?
I'm looking at it right now, because no, I did not.
Yeah, when it enters the battlefield, destroy target non-creature permanent, and it has Persist.
Huh.
Which means when it dies, it comes back with a -1/-1 counter.
Well, that actually seems really, really good.
The first time. If it dies when it has a -1/-1 counter, it doesn't come back. Things persist once without shenanigans.
Yeah, but with that Through the Breach, that seems really good.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. Wow. Okay, great.
Yeah, so this is a pretty cool little deck here that takes the like Titan Shift deck and the Through the Breach deck and smashes them together and gets this, and it won. Hey.
Yeah. Okay, that was your first place. What about second place, Chu?
I don't know. Who was in second place?
Well, it's actually in order through second place. After that, I'm going to have
to tell. Okay, so Sam Pardee was in second place playing the Grixis Death Shadow deck. As we know and love, let's
tolerate,
say.
Allow?
Yeah. All right, who's next?
For now. Carlisle. Chris Carlisle.
Chris Carlisle, which is right here playing the Humans. Oh, this is the one that's got the Kessig Malcontents as a nice little finisher there. Okay, yep. Cool.
Okay, after that we have Huska.
Andrew Huska is right here playing, is it Phoenix?
It is. Yeah. In fifth place is Ruse, R-O-O-S, Ruse, Rose.
Tobias Ruse playing Dredge.
Ruse. Oh, so yeah. Not Magic. In sixth place, we have Fanazi.
All right, it looks like these are in order, except either third and fourth were swapped, or that we don't know how to read a bracket. It's one of
those. I'm pretty sure I got the bracket right.
Pretty sure. So, yeah, Fanazi's playing the green-black mid-range deck. You know, it's the redless Jund, as I call it, because it's essentially a Jund deck, but with no red and more black and green stuff.
Sure.
Yep.
And then in seventh place, Anderson.
Yep. Austin Anderson running a blue-white control, like you do. And then you finish it up with...
place.
This has got to be a typo, right? No, it's not.
No, okay. I think that's right.
Brian Wilms running Blue Moon. Been a while since we've seen that.
I saw you standing alone?
Yeah. With the thing in the ice.
That's why you were alone.
Buh. Also rocking the 2 Jace the Mind Sculptor and the 1 Ral Is It Viceroy. Nice. Does it have the court-mandated... yep, there it is. Karanos, God of Storms, in the board because you're playing blue-red, and it's not Is It Phoenix, so you have to have Karanos, God of Storms, in the deck. I bet that's why the Is It Phoenix deck has gotten so big. They wanted to find a way around that mandate that you have to have a Karanos. So they made a new deck. Mm-hmm. Nothing clues? No? I thought that was kind of fun.
I'm sorry. No, I was doing a thing in the chat. I apologize. I was not paying
attention.
Imagine
that. Okay. Luckily for you, we're done now.
Awesome. Fabulous. That's great. That was modern fun that was had by people playing modern in a place with some stuff. And that's good.
Oh, hey, real quick.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Excellent. I can never mind very quickly.
Oh, this was a GP Calgary. Okay, Calgary. Never mind. Just kidding. Nothing.
All right, nothing to see here. Move along.
Yep.
Move along. Oh, that hurts, Stark. Oh, that really hurts, Stark. Chewie, can you like, I don't know, give him a timeout?
I don't know if I can, because he's a mod. Oh, thank you for the bits. Spinball Witch for Maniple, Maniple, Maniple. Not yet, though, because, hey, Clues, we're done.
Yeah, we are done. Hey, on behalf of our normal third member, who is not here, I just want to say Squee is currently traveling, so he's not with us this week, so he's off on vacation. He will be back soon. We wish him well. I hope he's having fun. When he gets back, I'm sure he will have epic, epic tales of what it's like on the other side of the world. So that'll be neat. Look forward to that. Should you want to encourage him in his travels, you can find him on Twitter. He is at Squee Goblin Nabob. There is no I in Goblin. He's investigating why that might be. Possibly with the help of a talking Pikachu wearing a little hat.
I would like to point out that it has come to my attention that there is no I in Goblin. The I is actually in Squee's apartment while Squee is in Japan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Huh.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Then I guess that brings us to me. Your best bet to reach me, as always, is on Twitter. I am at LockLuzet, spelled just like it is in the show notes. There's a Y in there. Figure out where it's at. That'll be awesome. I just got back from PAX East. Like I said, had a real good time at PAX East. Wish I didn't have to come back. Wish PAX East could just go on a few days longer so that I could spend more time there. It was awesome. Possibly my highlight of PAX East. The wife and I decided to play some Two-Headed Giant because we really enjoy Two-Headed Giant as a format. So Two-Headed Giant sealed. We played round one. We lost round one. We should have lost that game like seven times, but the two guys that we were playing, I'm not sure that they had slept. They were real distracted and they kept screwing things up and their attacks were always suboptimal, but they managed to get there. Even though our decks really, really sucked, we hung on for as long as we could. Round two, we sit down at round two. I had not looked at who our opponents were. I just looked at what table we were at. I headed to the table. We sat down. Wife and I are getting out our playmats and our decks. And this guy walks up and sits down across the table from us. And my wife looks at him and looks at me and looks at him. And I look at him and he goes, "Hi, my name's James." And I said, "I'm sorry, what's your last name?" And he goes, it's Portnow. So I don't know if that name means anything to anyone out there listening, but James Portnow is one of the guys who does extra credits. And so it was him. And I think his name is Matt, the other guy who does the voiceover on extra credits. We were playing the guys from extra credits in round two, which was just amazing. And they had actual good decks and knew what they were doing and just wiped the floor with us. It was just not even close. We were just completely and utterly destroyed. And then we got to spend about 10 or 15 minutes just talking to them about extra credits, which was really, really cool. So that was tons of fun, is what I'll say.
Nice.
The other really neat thing that I got to do while I was there, this is just out there for anybody who is a Destiny player. There's a guy who does YouTube videos about the Destiny lore, the storyline behind Destiny. And his name is, my name is Bife. I'll just call him Bife from now on because it's really weird. Bife was at PAX and he did a meet and greet. And so I got to go meet him and say hello and get a picture. So that was great. I really enjoy his videos. If you're into Destiny lore, check out Bife on the YouTubes. But if you're into other stuff on the YouTubes, I might recommend there's this buddy of mine who has a little channel on YouTube where he streams games and he posts videos that are of podcasts that he does. You may have never heard of him. He's the Manapool on YouTube. It's a pretty good channel. I think you should go check it out. He's very consistent with putting up quality content, And so you've always got something to watch when the mana pool is in your corner. That's what I'll say. So, hey, I guess take it away, Chewy. You got anything you want to talk about?
I don't trust anybody that calls himself a pool. I'm just saying.
That's fair. That's fair.
Like, I don't trust people named Jason.
Oh, never trust a Jason.
Yeah. So, hi, I'm Chewy.
And, hey, Chewy.
You might know me from the Mana Pool.
Oh. Huh.
Yeah.
I never made the connection.
It's the damnedest thing.
Yeah, it really is.
But yeah, we do Monday Night Magic most Mondays right here on twitch.tv/TheManaPool. We also live stream the Manapool podcast most of the time. We can't this week because we have preview cards. Right here on Thursdays.
Careful,
oh,
that hurts.
Oh, there it was. That. Something popped and now it feels better, but it wasn't that spot that I pulled. It's just something else that popped. Okay, so... hey, I've got a YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/TheManaPool, where I post at least one video every day of assorted stuff. Right now, what's going up is still Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, The World of Light, the single player. It's not a story mode exactly. It's more like a challenge mode where I don't know what you'd call it, but it's a single player mode, and it's stupid amounts of fun. And it's massive, and I have made a vow that I will put the entire World of Light on YouTube as YouTube videos. So those will be going up for quite a while. And also, I've got a bunch of Hearthstone stuff going up in the near future. And recently, I had some sweet Tess Greymane espionage rogue deck games in Hearthstone. The return... to heroic Blackrock Mountain when I finally took that 3 hours of raw footage of the Rend Blackhand fight and took out 2 hours of it, edited it down into something watchable. That went up. And there's some games with Mike, my Manapool co-host, you know, the Beardy Man.
There's
some games I played against him and some games I played with him. Coming up soon, there's also a farewell to the Year of the Mammoth, because the Hearthstone rotation is coming up soon. Mike came over yesterday, actually, and we recorded a thing talking about all the stuff that's rotating out, because there's a lot of stuff, three sets worth of Hearthstone are rotating out, and we talked about what that means for the individual classes and for deck building in general. So that was informative. That'll be going up sometime right before their rotation, which happens April 9th, by the way, so that's when Rise of the Shadows comes out and when standard rotation happens. So it's very soon. I've also got a horrible... Well, I've got a Rumble run in Hearthstone with a twist at the end that is going up soon. I've also got some Plague Inc. that I need to work on and two more heroic Blackrock Mountain fights that have already been recorded. So there's lots of Hearthstone going up, lots of Super Smash Bros. Ultimate going up, and a few other things as well on youtube.com/TheManaPool. What do I stream here on Twitch? Hey, chat, what have I streamed lately on Twitch? My brain, if I don't have videos for it, my brain just shuts off. Let's see here. Monday Night Magic, Hearthstone, Super Smash Brothers. Oh, I tried to stream Enter the Gungeon. That was it. I know I missed something. Yeah, but I had controller issues with Enter the Gungeon, so I didn't stream it very long. Instead, I just got angry. So that was a problem. Okay, then. But hey, if you want to help support what I do with this insane amount of content creation, remember, all of this, once we're done recording, is a one-man show. I do all the editing and all the posting and all the everything myself. That's one YouTube video at least every day, and two podcasts a week, and about 4 or 5 streams a week. So that's all just yours truly. So hey, if you want to help, the easiest way to do that is spread the word.
Yeah.
If you see a video you like, throw it on social media something somewhere. Or if you something like that. If you see the, I made a meme. Clues, I made a meme.
You did?
Yeah, I sent it to you, didn't I?
You probably did, but was trying to say you have to Liliana. Describe it. Yeah, yeah.
That's the one. So, hey, if you see that, it's got the Maniple logo on it. Share it.
It is. It does. And someone will probably paste their logo over it. And then...
Probably, because the internet.
Yeah.
But right. Hey, I made that. It's even in my trademark font. But anyway, yeah, spreading the word is the absolute easiest and most direct way that helps a lot. But if you want to be more, like, financially direct, then go to patreon.com/themanapool and become my lifeguard at the Manapool. Because that helps immensely, because that's how I keep the lights on. So, the uncommon lifeguards get early access to YouTube videos and Manapool episodes. Again, not this week because it's a preview and we can't do an early release. Sorry. But... most of the others. And then... what am I saying? That was uncommon. Rare lifeguards get the early access to YouTube videos and Manapool episodes, and access to the odds and ends, all the stuff recorded before and after, both Monday Night Magic and the Manapool, where you get to hear clues.
Which
swear.
Are totally worth it. There was swearing today.
There was.
And a story. There was a story about a new game that I found that you may have heard of. Some of you have heard of. I talk about it. It's cool. You should check it out. I got some more stories for afterwards, so there's going to be more in the odds and ends.
You want to at least give the name of that game so they'll know what
I don't
to
know. I kind of want to talk. Okay, it's KeyForge. Talk about my experiences with KeyForge.
So if you want to hear more about KeyForge, become at least a rare lifeguard.
That's right.
But the Mythic lifeguards get the early access, the odds and ends, and the sponsorship shout out on the end screen for all of the YouTube videos each month and for. Or during each podcast. Yeah. So I would like to thank our Mythic lifeguards. You know what? I'm going to start from the bottom this time. The Beast Father, Aaron Goodwine, Mike Millerburn, Bartle, Dan Holm, Aleph Cat, Violet Moon. Holy crap, I'm scrolling up. I lost my place. There it is. John Parker, Keith Moody, Stark Maximum, Brian DeLucci, Jason Kaus. Don't trust that guy named Jason. Jake Jansons, Cody Buckowing, Jason Doan. Don't trust that guy. Named Jason. Danny Liao, Fayan Says, Casey, the one that bought me this. Sophia Brittain, PJ McMullen, Stuart Slaw, Jeff Spencer, Alex Gonzalez, Jeff Morris, Connor Kennedy, Team U, Hell Is Haru, Lance Delicious, Al, Andrew Hunt, and Kim Ho. Man, that's hard to do backwards when I've been doing it forwards for so long. Whoa. All right, so thank you all so very much for your support. I quite literally could not do it without you. And thanks to all of the lifeguards, no matter what tier you're at, I also couldn't do it without you. And hey, if you want to get the odds and ends or to see the stuff that's going up on YouTube early, sometimes way early, like I think the videos that are sitting on Patreon right now waiting to go up have been sitting there for damn near a week, at least 4 or 5 days. Because I've been getting ahead, because I can't. So the thing about the end screen with the lifeguard thing is that once it gets close to the end of the month, and I know that videos are going to be, I have enough videos to cover until Patreon collects everything, I have to stop making new videos so I can change the end screen with any changes that go to the Mythic lifeguards. So now, tomorrow when I wake up, it's going to be render videos all day. So, yeah. And then those will get uploaded probably 4 and 5 days ahead of time, so you can totally see what I'm up to way early. Yeah. But anyway. What are we talking about?
Tell me.
Anything else? Was that it?
I think that might have been it.
Alright, so
I think we were there.
This has been Monday Night Magic number 647.
Checks out.
It does. Thank you all so very much for watching or listening. Or just joining us, however you did. And, go play some Magic.